Last week we read through Perek Tet, if I'm not mistaken, and we're going to spend a couple of weeks kind of looking at various pieces of the story. One of the intriguing little pieces of the dialogue. I thought we'd just start with this little piece because it's kind of an oddity. Seems like a tangential piece of the story. And that's this quarter kesef, reva shekel kesef, this quarter that the na'ar finds in his pocket to pay the ro'eh for his advice about the missing donkeys. The whole perek has this kind of naive flavor to it of the simpleton kind of perception or perspective on Shaul. And that's something which we have to explore in greater length, in greater detail. But for now, let's just go back and review the part of the story where starting with Pasuk Vav. Starting with Pasuk Vav, Perek Tet Pasuk Vav. Vayomer lo, hinei na ish Elokim ba'ir hazot, ve'ish nichbad. Kol ashe yedaber bo yavo. The na'ar is speaking to Shaul, and he says to him, before we give up, right? Shaul wanted to give up and go back home because he was more concerned that his father was going to be worried about him than about the donkeys. So the Na'ar says, but wait a second, we have one last chance. There is in this city a Ish Ha'elokim. Now, it's interesting to note, what does Hinei Na Ish Elokim Ba'ir Hazot mean? This is actually related to another issue, but might as well point it out while we're here. What does Hinei Na Ish Ha'elokim Ba'ir Hazot mean? Behold, there is a Ish Ha'elokim, which is a term for a Navi, in this city.
But then how do you translate the na? The na is part of hine.
Well, hine na is one phrase, okay. But hine na means, that's a good question, what does the na mean here? Mm-hmm. It clearly doesn't mean please, right? Mm-hmm. Na as bakasha is certainly not the case. Hine na is almost an idiomatic expression. But it actually connects to what I'm suggesting, which is that he's not, that Shmuel is not in this city because that's his hometown. They didn't happen to come across Ramah, which is where Shmuel lives. Where Shmuel lives, they come to a city, where happens to be that Shmuel is also visiting there. That we saw later on.
And in English, it says "Behold now,"
right?
Meaning that he's
correct.
Not there all the time.
And that's the na. The "Behold now" is the na. The word na has two meanings in the Chumash, and it's actually important to note these two meanings. I think we must have touched on this at some point. The word na typically means please, ein na ela lashon bakasha. But the word na also means now, or immediately. Sometimes it can even mean now or immediately in the context of premature. So, for example, by the Korban Pesach, one of the restrictions of a Korban Pesach is al tochlu mimenu na uvashal mevushal b'mayim. You're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach cooked in water, nor can you eat the Korban Pesach na. And in that context, it means not fully cooked, raw, not fully cooked. It has to be Rosho Krav al Kibo Kiim Tzli Esh. It has to be roasted on an open fire. So the context of in the Korban Pesach, it's very clear that the word na nun aleph there means premature. Al tochlu mimenu na. Another interesting reference to the word na, just as since you mentioned it, the other interesting reference to the word na is in Sefer Breshit. Beginning of Parshat Toldot is a very strange conversation Yaakov and Esav share. Perek Chav Zayin. Sorry, no, it's not Perek Chav Zayin. It's beginning of the Parshat is Perek Chav Hey. Perek Chav Hey, Pasuk Chav Zayin. No, Chav Tet. Vayazed Yaakov Nazid. Remember the soup? Vayazed Yaakov Nazid. Vayavoy Esav min Asadev U Ayef. Yaakov's preparing some kind of a soup or a dish. They say lentils.
Stew.
Esav comes in from the field, tired. Vayomer Esav al Yaakov, ha'aliteni na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, ki ayef anochi. So Rashi says, inna l'lashon bakasha. Give me, please, from this red soup, because I am tired. Aken kvashmo Edom. Vayomer Yaakov michrach hayomet b'choratcha li. I'll give it to you if you sell me your birthright. So whatever the context of the selling of the birthright is less our issue. But the phrase ha'aliteni na is a very strange phrase.
Yeah, in Stone Age,
translated as now. Right. So that's based on the Rashbam. And Rashi there also says something similar. The expression na there, if it's in its typical usage, which is please, it would be very strange for Esav to come in from the field and say, give me, please, some of the soup. And that's not necessarily Esau's character. But if you look at the word na as an expression of now, or premature, or early, or in that context, then what Esau is saying to Yaakov is ha'aliteni. Ha'aliteni is also an interesting verb. It doesn't mean to give me or to feed me. Ha'aliteni means to pour it down my throat.
So give me to swallow.
To pour it down my throat. So
there's an urgency.
There's an urgency there. And it's reflected in the fact that he's ayef, he's hungry, he's tired, he's coming in from the field. Right? There's an urgency there. If you compare it to the Korban Pesach, which is not allowed to be eaten raw or uncooked or premature, what Esav is saying to Yaakov is, I don't want to wait for the soup to be finished cooking, give it to me now. Give it to me raw. Give it to me unfinished.
Character.
Right, which reflects his character.
What I say to my kids, could you taste it instead of just swallowing it?
Right. Right. Which is certainly in keeping with the character of Esav, of Asui, of now. Everything is now. Everything is immediate. Everything is instant gratification. There is no tomorrow in Esav's world. Right? That's why he sells the birthright.
He says, I'm going to die, right?
Right, so that's a whole philosophical perspective on what that means. But that's this mysterious word, na. Come back to Sefer Shmuel, Perek Tet, Hine na ish elokim ba'ir hazot. There is now, in this city, a man of God. If I translate it that way, then what he's basically saying is that this is not an ordinary occurrence. There happens to be, in this city, a man of God, and that's not necessarily a normal occurrence in the city. They don't usually have a Navi. Why that's significant, again, comes back to the fact that everything in this Perek seems to be orchestrated and planned to be exactly right. Shmuel happens to be in the right city at the right time to happen to be encounter Shaul, and we're going to talk about that piece of it, Bezrat Hashem, next week. But if we look at, for those who'll be here, for those who won't, it'll be on tape. If we look at, go back to Pasuk Vav, Vayomer lo, hinena ish elokim ba'ir hazot, v'ish nechbad, kol asher yidaber bo yavo. This ish elokim is a very successful ish elokim. Whatever he says happens. Ata nechat shum sham, ulai yagid lanu et darkenu asher alachnu aleh. Let's go, maybe he'll tell us what we need to know. ויאמר שאול לנערו, והנה נלך, ומה נביא לאיש? כי הלחם אזל מכלינו, ותשורה אין להביא לאיש האלוקים. מה איתנו? If we go, what are we going to bring him? We have no food. Our bread is complete, is finished. And we have no tshura, we have no gift, no present, no payment, no compensation to be able to bring to the Isha Elokim. Yosef, anar lanot at Shaul v'yomer, oh, says the nar, not a problem. Hine nimtza biyadi, erev ha-shekel kesef. He puts his hand in his pocket, pulls out a quarter, he says, I have a quarter. V'natati la-Isha Elokim, migid lanu et arkenu, we'll pay the Isha Elokim his quarter, and he'll tell us where our donkeys are.
But is the nar usually paid?
That's the question we're going to deal with today.
Also, why does he have money and his master doesn't?
Right, so that I sort of touched on a little bit last week, the irony of the fact that the Nar has more money than he,
right,
reflects a little bit the personality of Shaul, which we addressed that a little bit in the context of the pieces about Malchus and the okay. Expectations of a Melech. You see, Shaul
so
is not...
Is he not concerned with material things?
At this point in the parak, the presentation of Shaul is very much one of naive, simple, shepherd,
modest.
He's not particularly taken by the flirtations of the women. He's not bothered. He's not taken by money. Like nothing seems to faze him. He's focused on the issue of Malchut of Kibud Av Va'Em and finding his father's donkeys, and that's it. Again, that's an oversimplification of naivete, and we'll have to look at why it's presented that way. That's part of our agenda in the weeks coming. There's a very powerful reason for it to be presented like that. I think it's intentional. If you go back to Shmuel and the opening chapter of Shmuel's first nevuah, where he's a little boy, and he hears his voice, he's sleeping in the Kodesh HaKadashim, we're in the Beit HaMikdash, and he hears a little voice, and he goes running out to Eli, and he says, Eli, Eli, did you call me? And he says, no. You have that same kind of naivete, simplistic vision, impression of Shmuel. It's a kind of, he's hearing God's voice, he doesn't even know what it is. He goes running to Eli, Eli says, no, it's God's voice. And what he gets in the end is a nevuah that's so bombastic that he can't even reflect on it to tell a show, right? There's this contrast between the naivete with which the story opens and the power of the message that's conveyed at the end. I think you have the same contrast here. You have this the naivete with which Shaul is presented to us until he's handed the melucha. Once he's handed the king, the monarchy, suddenly this naive, simple Shaul becomes a warrior of great significance. And we're going to look at that contrast. But for now, I want to address Judy's question, because that's really, for today's agenda, that's a question that I wanted to look at in more detail. This notion that they think, in their minds, that they have to pay the Isha Elokim in order to get his services, which is really a remarkable presentation. And then we have this inserted statement about terminology we should be aware. Ki navi lefanim beYisrael kol amar haish velechto lidrosh elokim lechu v'nalcha ad haroeh. In the past, when a person went to seek God or to seek God's counsel, he would say, "Let's go to the roeh." Ki lenavi hayom yikare lefanim yis haroeh. That which we call a navi in those days was called a roeh. Why is it of any relevance to us? So that we know the rest of the story, we couldn't figure it out. Hema olim b'male ha'ir, right? And they ask, when they get to the ladies of the city, they ask, hayesh b'zeh haro'eh, they're asking for the ro'eh. We need to know that they're asking for the ro'eh, and that means they're asking for the navi, because we call them a navi, but in those days they called them a ro'eh. We just need to know that we're talking about the same person, and so we have this inserted parenthetical statement about what we call a navi, they called a ro'eh. Similarly, you have it in Pasuk Yud Chet. In Pasuk Yud Chet, Vayigash Shaul et Shmuel betoch ha'shar. Shaul comes to Shmuel at the gate. V'yom en agidan ali ebeze beit haro'eh. Tell me, where can I find the house of the ro'eh? V'yomer Shmuel et Shaul, v'yomer anochi haro'eh. So this constant conversation about the ro'eh, and then the conversation shifts. So there's two questions that we need to look at. Number one is why the distinction between the navi and the ro'eh, and why there's so much play on that contrast. It seems to be an irrelevant piece of information. The second question, which is actually the question I want to begin with, is this concept of paying the navi. The notion that in order for them to get information from the Navi, at least in their minds, they need to bring the Navi some compensation. It's a very complicated piece. And what makes it so much more complicated is that this is a theme that carries through in many stories in Tanakh, but always from the opposite perspective, namely, that you were never allowed to pay the Navi. And a Navi who took reward or compensation for his nevuah was an absolute anathema. It was not allowed. And I'll show you several stories. And you'll see the pattern that emerges from them. And then we'll come back to an attempt to try to understand what's going on here. Let's start from a simple one. Let's start from Sefer Shmuel. Let's start from Perek Yud Bet. Beginning of Perek Yud Bet, Shmuel in his ceremonial anointment of Shaul, before he anoints Shaul, he turns to the people in anger, carrying along over the theme of the last Perek. Vayomer Shmuel al kol Yisrael, hinei shemati b'kolchem l'chol asher amartem li v'amlich alechem melech. Behold, I've heard what you have asked me, I have appointed a king. Etayne melech mitalech lifnechem. Here's the king you asked for. ואני זקנתי ושבתי ובני עיניים אתכם, ואני התהלכתי לפניכם מנעורי עד היום הזה. I have been loyal, I have led you, I have gone with you from my youth. פסק גימו, פרק י"ב, פסק גימו. הנני אנובי. Now answer me this. נגד השם ונגד משיחו. Before God and before his anointed one, before his king, his witness. את שור מי לקחתי וחמור מי לקחתי ואת מי השקתי ואת מי רצותי ומיד מי לקחתי כופר ואני מנאי בו ואשיב לכם. You tell me, whose ox did I take? Whose donkey did I take? Who did I oppress? Who did I take a ransom bribe from him and or ignored his plight and I will restore it, I will return it. I never took a penny for myself. Everything I did for the people. What would have happened in that ceremony if a na'ar in the back of the crowd would have lifted up his hand and said, oh, but you took my quarter. You understand the contrast? Shmuel can turn to the people and said, I led you loyally and faithfully for all these years. And to demonstrate his loyalty and his faith, he says, I never took anything from any one of you.
Well, then how did he support himself? Do we know that?
That is a good question.
How did he support himself?
He didn't take any money for all these services he rendered.
Support in those days was a little different than supporting
in
today's days.
We don't know.
That it is a fair question, and a question we may be able to come to an answer but the contrast here is important. And the contrast between Shmuel's declaration of etshor mi lakachti v'chamor mi lakachti to the we can't go to the Navi unless we can pay him is a strange contrast. And it gets better. We're going to do a run through. Right. No, they did. Well, they may have offered it, but they didn't get the chance to give it to him because he turns to them and he says, "Your donkeys are there, and now come." Right. He certainly doesn't. In fact, on the contrary, he feeds them.
Right.
So no, on the contrary, we know that he does not take the money. That's clear. And they don't even get the chance to offer.
This is why they offered it.
My concern isn't that he does that. He takes the money because we know he doesn't.
Their initial premise was to offer him sustenance, bread.
Right.
Not coin.
Correct. Anything. Sustenance, bread, tshuva. And ultimately comes to tshuva. Tshuva means a gift. Tshuva means compensation. So the perception that they need to pay him compensation for his counsel, for his nevuah, is at the core of this issue.
So
the perception of it. The reality is they don't pay him because he doesn't take it. But what's the perception? What's the... In the language of the Gemara, we call it a havamina. What was the intended mindset of the Na'ar and Shaul when they understood that they couldn't go to the Navi without that compensation?
That's the question.
Okay, so let's see. I'm going to do a quick walkthrough of a bunch of stories, and you'll see the common theme to all of them. And then we'll come back. But do you see how prevalent this issue is in order to understand how deep the question is? Let's go to Malachim. Malachim, we're going to try to do this. We'll try to do this in order. Malachim Aleph, Perek, Yud Gimel. Jumping ahead, about 100 years. Right, not quite, but about 100 years. If you take the life of David and the life of Shlomo, plus the age, plus the years of Shaul, plus the early years of Rechavam, we are now in the Perek Yigimel. It's about 100 years later. The Shaul, David, Shlomo, Rechavam are the kings of Malchut Beit David. And then we have the split. Right? When the kingdom splits, it splits in the days because of a rebellion led by a man by the name of Yeravam ben Nevat. Correct. Yeravam ben Nevat's rebellion is set in place by the words of a Navi. Perek Yud Gimel. Vine, actually it's Perek... Perek Yud Aleph is the I'm going to stay in Perek Yud Gimel. I'm just going to tell you the Perek Yud Aleph is the split is the Navi where he tells him he's going to split the kingdom. Perek Yud Bet, and then what Yeravam had done in his effort to keep the kingdom split was he made a grave mistake. That's a pun. We all have to laugh, right? Because he made a graven image. He took an idol of the ego. And he put it in Dan and in Beit El, and he created a competitive Mizbeach altar temple to the Mikdash in Yerushalayim. That was in violation of the Navi. That was never intended. And so the Navi comes back to him in Perek Yud Gimel to say to him, you've crossed the line. And he comes to him in Beit El specifically because Beit El was where Yeravam had put this temple, Mizbeach, and this eagle, this golden eagle, in competition to the Beit HaMikdash that stood in Yerushalayim. That's the background to the story. V'nei ish elokim bam yudah b'dvar Hashem el bet el. Ish elokim. What is an ish elokim? As the Na'ar said to Shaul, ish elokim, hinei na ish elokim. By irazot, ish elokim is a Navi. So this Navi from Yehuda comes to Beit El. V'yiravam omed al mizbeach lahaktir. Yeravam is on top of the Mizbeach, amongst a number of mistakes that Yeravam made, is that he, as king, played the role of Kohen as well. V'yikal mizbeach b'dvar Hashem ayomim. Mizbeach, mizbeach, komar Hashem. The Navi addresses the Mizbeach. The Navi addresses the Mizbeach, and he says to him, Hinei ben nolad lebeit David Yoshiyahu shmo v'zavach alecha at kohanei abamot makdirim alecha v'atzmot adam yisrafu alecha. There will be a king born to the house of David. His name is, for now, is not our issue. And he will take all of the kohanim of this Avodah Zarah, and he will burn them and their bones on this altar. He's speaking to the altar, he won't speak to the Navi, to the king. You want proof that this is going to happen? I'll give you a mofet. A mofet, or a wonder, or a miracle, is designed to be a proof to sustain the nevuah, not the other way around. This mizbeach will crack. And the ashes that are inside it will pour out. Remember, the king is on top of the Mizbeach. The king is standing on top of the Mizbeach, and the Navi comes and he speaks to the Mizbeach, saying that this Mizbeach is going to be destroyed, and the false priests, the altars of the priests of idolatry are going to be, their flesh and bones will be burnt on this Mizbeach, and the proof is that by the time I leave, a crack will emerge in this Mizbeach itself. It's a kind of a symbol to what's going to come. When the king heard the words of this Ish Elokim that he called to the Mizbeach, he stretched forth his hand as if to say, grab him! Meaning? Seize him, arrest him! Right? Probably it's the first time, but it's not the last time. Right? They will try to arrest the Navi in his, because of what he says. Vativash yado sheshalach alav v'lo yachol lahashiva elav. And his hand withered. Literally, as he stretched it out to point to grab him, his hand literally withered. Vativash yado. By the way, interesting analogy to the Perek of Tehillim about Yerushalayim. Mashkechech Yerushalayim. Okay, the parallel is not unintended. The mizbeach nikra, the altar was cracked. Vayishafech hadesha min hamizbeach kamofet shenatan ish elokim b'dvar Hashem, as was proof of the words of the Navi. In which case, the king changes his tone. Vayan amelach vayomer al ish elokim. Chalnat pnei Hashem Elokecha, v'itpalel ba'adi, beseech God, pray for me, v'tashov yadi elai, let my hand return to me. V'yichal Ish Elokim b'pnei Hashem, so the Ish Elokim prayed to God, v'tashov yad ha'melech elav, the hand returned to him, hatika v'shana, and it was as it was as originally. Now this king is going to have a very different attitude towards this Navi. Vayedaber ha-melech el ish elokim. So the king says to the ish elokim, Bo iti habayta usa'ada. Come to my house and have a meal. Let me feed you lunch. Vetna lach ha-matat. And give you a gift. What Shaul called tshura.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
About the translation, it says in here, "Your God." Is that an accurate translation?
But that's it is, but it's also that's not uncommon. It's third person. Your servant, pray to your God. Pray for your humble servant that he should be spared. It's sort of that third person.
Okay, so it doesn't right. imply
that he didn't
no. believe in that. Okay. V'yomer ish elokim al hamelech, you want to feed me lunch? You want to give me food? You want to give me a present? Says the Ish Elokim to the king, Im titen li et chatzi betecha lo avo imach. You could give me half your kingdom. I wouldn't come with you. I will not eat bread or drink water in this place. Why? Because that's what God has commanded me, not to eat bread and not to drink water in this place. Not to return the same route you came. That's a whole different piece, subject of another shir. He restarted his journey home along a different road. So right away you see that the feeding the Navi was a major piece of this conversation. He wanted to feed him, and the Navi said, no, gets better. There is in Beit El an old Navi. His son comes running to him, he tells him all that transpired with the Navi and Yeravam and the Mizbeach. He tells him this is the road he's taking. They see the road that this Ish Elokim is taking. So this Navi Zaken, he says, go grab me my donkey. Vayach b'shula hachamor, vayir kavalav, he goes riding on his donkey. Vayelach acharei Ish Elokim, vayimseu yoshev tachat ha'ela. And he catches up to this Ish Elokim sitting under a tree. And he says to him, ata Ish Elokim ha-shabatam Yehuda, are you the Ish Elokim? Vayomar, ani, I am. Vayomar elav, lech iti abayta v'chol lachem. Come and eat bread with me. I cannot eat and I cannot drink bread in this place. So let's stop for a moment. Open parentheses. Why can't he eat bread in this place? Why is it in this place he's not allowed to eat bread or drink water?
Because of the Mizbeach?
Maybe it's because of Beit El and Mizbeach and he doesn't want to have enough from the place of Avodah Zarah, possibly. Or, another possibility? Because as long as he's in Beit El, what's his mission? Till he leaves Beit El, what's his mission here?
To destroy the idols.
He's there to warn you, Avraham ben Nevat, that his Mizbeach is in violation of the terms of the split of the kingdom, and he's lost that right. In other words, he's on what we would call in today's language, he's on the clock. He's on official business. And an official business is the Navi. He may not eat or drink. And certainly not from the people who he has been sent to warn, talk, or address. Okay, he's on official business. So this Navi comes to him, this Navi Zaken, and he says to him, come eat with me, and the Navi says, I'm not allowed to, because I'm on official business.
But can I ask a question? Why is he referred to as the Navi Zaken?
Because he's an older guy.
No, but nowhere else is the Navi is referred to as a Navi.
When we get to Bezrat Hashem, Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Gimel,
you'll tell me.
We'll address that question.
And the old Navi doesn't know that he's on official business?
He does. Who this old Navi is and what's his goal and what that's...
Oh.
This is all... The study of this parak would take us
okay.
A whole nother. They're all valid questions, all powerful questions. It has to do with who the Navi is and what's he trying to do and accomplish, etc. All I really want to pull out of this is the piece about the eating and the drinking, which we'll come to.
Okay.
But, Ki Dvar Elai B'Dvar Hashem, God, he's continuing and he says, because God told me, Lo Techalecham Lo Tishtamayim. Three rules, can eat, can drink, and have to return along a different road. He says to him, Gam ani navi kamocha. I'm also a Navi. Umalach diber elai b'dvar Hashem lemor. And a malach came to me also and said in the name of God, Hashiveu itach al betecha, v'yoch alechem, v'yesh mayim, kichesh lo. And he told me to tell you, to invite you, to give you food and water. Kicheshlo, meaning he lied to him. Why? What his agenda is? Who knows?
Who lied to who?
This is Nabi Zaken. This old Nabi Zaken lied to this young, to this Nabi.
And it literally says he lied to him?
Kichishlo. What is he, how does he translate Kichishlo?
Lied to him.
Because no Malach came to this Nabi Zaken to tell him to feed him. This is his...
He made it up.
But understand how significant this is. Ve'yashav ito. So he said, okay, you told me, this is from Dvar Hashem. So ve'yashav ito, he makes the mistake, and he... goes vayochal lachem beveto v'yeshmaim. He goes, he eats bread, water. V'yim yoshim al hashulchan. They're sitting at the table eating. Pause in the middle of the pasuk because you have to hear to see the scene, right? V'hi heim yoshim al hashulchan. They're sitting and eating in the middle. Boom. V'hi dvar Hashem al navi asher shivo. V'yikra el isho lakim sheba miyuda lemor koma Hashem. Yan kimarita pi Hashem. Right now God comes to the Navi. Which Navi?
The original one.
Vahi dra Hashem el Hanavi Asher Heshivo.
The old one.
The old one. So the Navu.
The one who lied,
right? The old Asher Heshivo, the one who
lied.
The one who returned him. The one who. And he says to him, "Vayikra el Isha Elokim Asher Ba Miyuda." And he turns to Isha Elokim, came from Yuda, and he says to him, "Koma Hashem, Yan ki marita pi Hashem v'lo shamarta ta mitzvah shetzivcha Hashem alakecha v'tasha v'tocha lechem v'teisht mayim b'makom asher diber alecha al tocha lechem al tisht mayim lo tavo nivlatcha el kever avotecha." Because you violated the command of God and ate and drank in a place where I told you you were not allowed to eat and drink, you will die, and your death will be such that you will not even be buried.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
That's quite a punishment.
And he leaves, and that's what happens. He dies, and the rest of the story is really fascinating in and of its own right. But understand the implication. A Navi on official business, he's there in the city to convey a message. He's not allowed to take bread or water. Cannot take a morsel of bread or a glass of water from the people to whom he is sent to relay his message. That's the role of a Navi. And that's a theme that carries through many places in Tanakh. It's not just one story. And so by the time we're done, we have to go back to Shaul and Izna. But I'll show you one more, actually two. I'll show you one more story, and then I'll show you another one. This one we read as a haftorah, so it should be familiar to us at some point. Malachim Bet, Perek Hey. Perek Hey. So the first half of this perek is the story of Naaman Sar Tzava, who is a Metzor. So this is read as the Haftorah, I think, of either Parshat, it's one or the other, Tazriel or Metzor, I never remember which. It's the story of a king of Aram who gets smitten with Tzara'at, whatever Tzara'at is. And he is somehow his circumstances are such that he's told that there is amongst the Jews a Navi by the name of Elisha. Pasuk Chet, it says Elisha, Isha Elokim. And he hears about this Elisha that he has special gifts. Communication with God, ability to do miracles. Hopefully he will cure him of this tzara'at. Pasuk Tet, Vayavon Naaman besuso uberichbo ve'amod petach habayit l'Elisha. So Naaman comes with his horses and his chariots and his entourage and his, right, this is the king of Aram, enemy of Israel. Comes to the house of Elisha. Veishlach alav Elisha malach lemor, Haloch v'rachatzta sheva pamim beyarden v'yashov sechalecha utahar. Go and bathe 7 times in the waters of the Yarden. The river is a mikveh. So go and bathe in the mikveh 7 times, and you will be restored. Vayiktzof Naaman vayelach. Naaman is angry. Why is he angry? Because it's a joke. It's a joke. After everything he's heard about Elisha, this great Navi, he thought he would stretch out a staff, or do some hocus pocus, some magic words, whatever it is. This doesn't fit the cultural frame of reference of Naaman, Aram. Vayelach vayomer ine amarti elai yatze yatzo ve'amad v'kara b'shem Hashem Elokav v'nif yado l'makom asafa mitzora. I said he would come out, he would wave a staff, he would do something, he would gather the mitzora v'alotov amana ufarpar naharot damasek mikol meimei Yisrael alerchotz bahem mitarti. I gotta go dip in his little nothing of a river called the Yarden. You want a river? Back in Aram, we got rivers. We got bodies of water. This, you know, you've seen the Yarden? See what the Yarden looks like?
Yep.
Okay? It's hard to imagine why they needed to split the Yarden to cross it in the days of Yeshua. Right? Yeah, then you can jump over the Yarden. You want a river? I got the Euphrates. I got the Tigris. Okay, sitting in Aram. I got rivers. I need to... This is a joke. He's mocking me. So he turns angry to leave. His servants come to him and they say to him, they beseech him, they say to him, Avid davar gadol and Avid davar elecha. Halotase. A Navi after all. At least, you know what? As I'm sure they said to him, Vas,
what's the big deal?
What can it hurt? Right? What can it hurt? What can it hurt? Vav kemai elecha rechatzutaha. Vayered vayitbol bayarden sheva pa'amim kidvar ish elokim. He goes, he dips into the Yarden 7 times. I'm sure he said l'shem malchus, l'shem yuchu kuchibrichu. He said b'shem malchus, whatever brachas he said. Goes and he dips in the Yarden 7 times. Vayashab saroki b'sar nar katon veita. Restored his skin. Which, by the way, may be the first source for the restorative powers of the Dead Sea. Mm. Right? The Dead Sea is famous for its ability to heal skin illnesses because of its compositions and we don't know. But the Jordan River is what feeds the Dead Sea. Vayashav Elisha Elokim hu v'chom machaneu. So then he comes back to the Isha Elokim. And here's where the story gets really interesting. Comes back to the Isha Elokim with all of his entourage. Now, hineina. Here's that phrase again, hineina. Now I know that there is none like God in all the earth, except in Israel. Now I know that God of Israel is true. Talk about the Kiddush Hashem. The impact that this event has had on the general of the army of the enemy of Israel. Aram is an empire. We're not talking about a little tiny Amon Moav, Aram is the first major empire that existentially threatens the people of Israel. It would be like the general of the army of Iran coming to Israel today and being cured from some illness in the Israeli hospital because of the word of the Navi, and then he comes and he says, okay, that's it. You guys got it all right. You got the right God and the right religion and the right everything. V'yata kachna bracha me'et avdecha. Says the Sar Tzva to Elisha, now take my bracha. What's my bracha? What does a bracha mean?
A gift.
A gift, food. Right? What we, in South Africa, what we call a kiddush after davening, in South Africa they call it a bracha. Okay, a bracha is food. Okay? Take my food. Vayomer. Chai Hashem, Hashem amadati lefanav. says Elisha, on God's life, by the living God, imekach, if I will take anything from you. Remember when King of Sodom wanted to offer Abraham, ten nefesh v'arachush kach lach, I'll pay you for your services, and he says, imichut v'yad tzuchnal, same thing, I won't take anything from you. V'yivtzar bo lakachat, he begged him to take, I'll pay you for your services. V'yima'en, he refused. V'yomer na'aman, v'lo yitanena la'avdecha masat semet pradim adama, ki lo yaseh od avdecha olav azavach l'olohim achim ki im la'asha. From now forward, I will bring offerings not to any other God except to the God of Israel. Whatever I would have given to you, I will bring as an offering, but to God of Israel. But I have one request of you, and that is, I have to make an apology in advance. I'm booked at an important ceremony back in my hometown. I have one more official ceremony at which I, Naaman, have to officiate in my town. I can't get out of it, I'm already pre-booked. But after that Avodah Zarah pagan ritual, that's it, I'll be good. I'll never do it again. I'm finished. I just got one more. I'm looking at my calendar, pulled out my iPhone, pulled out my calendar. I got one more. I can't get out of it. But after that, I'm yours. Loyal. Forever. And he says, go in peace. And he leaves. And this is the impact here. The potential here is to transform an enemy, an existential enemy that really, truly threatens the people of Israel, and to turn him around so that he is now loyal to the people of Israel forever. Paragraph break. Vayomer Gehazi nar Elisha, Isha Elokim. Gehazi. Who is Gehazi?
Elisha's assistant.
Elisha's nar. Mm-hmm. הנה חסך אדוני את נאמן הארמי הזה מקחת מידו את אשר הביא. My God, my master, and God has prevented my master from being able to take the gift that Naaman has offered him. But he hasn't prevented me from doing so. I'll go after him and I'll get something.
I'll get it.
Okay, so he can't get. But why should I suffer? Why should I suffer? Vayirdov Gehazi acharei Naaman. Vayir'en Naaman rats acharav. Gehazi saw him and he running after him. Vayipol mi'al ha'merkava likrato. Got off his chariot, and then a man, Sar Tzavai, gets off his chariot to see Gehazi, who's the representative servant of Na'ar, of Elisha. Vayomer HaShalom, peace be with you. Vayomer Shalom, Adoni, Shlachani, Vayomer Shalom. Adoni, Shlachani Lemor, says Gehazi. My master has sent me saying, Hine ata zeh bao elai shnei na'arim mehar Ephraim mibnei ha'nevi'im t'na lahem kikar kesef u'shtei chalifot begadim. If you get two servants coming to you from the city, from Har Ephraim, them you can feed. Then you can give some food. Them you can give some clothes. V'yomer Naaman, ho'el kach kikraim. V'yifrotz bo v'yatza. He says, you want one piece of bread and an article of clothing? Take nemtzve. Take two. Take two loaves of bread. Take two articles of clothing. And he gives them. And then he leaves. And Gehazi has got his bread, he's got his fill, he's got his stomach, and he's got his clothes. He goes home. Takes the clothes that he got, puts them there. Vayishalachat anashim vayelech. V'hu ba v'yamod al Adonav. Elisha comes back to his master. Vayomer elav Elisha. Mi'ayin Gehazi. Elisha says to him, Gehazi, where were you? Vayomer lo alach avdecha navana. Says Gehazi, I didn't go anywhere. I've been right here.
Sure.
Vayomer elav lo libi alach kasher hafach ish me'al merkavto likratecha העת לקחת את הכסף ולקחת בגדים וזיתים וכרמים וצאן ובקר ועבדים ושפחות. וצרת נאמן תדבק בך ובזרעך לעולם. It's punishment for what you've done. The צרת of נאמן should be on you. ויצא מלפניו מצווה קשה. Understand what Gehazi did. Gehazi destroyed everything Elisha had accomplished. Because the bigger Kiddush Hashem here was not that Elisha cured Naaman. The bigger Kiddush Hashem was that he refused payment for it. In the mindset of the world of paganism, you go to a man of God, a miracle worker, and he does miracles for you, you pay him. That Elisha refused payment was core to the message that this was from God, and there's a message from God, you don't take payment. And when Gehazi ran after him and he took payment, he undermined the whole message that Elisha wanted to accomplish. It's not an accident that he went back and he forgot everything that he had ever said, that he said to Elisha, and he continued to be an enemy. And he literally destroyed everything that Elisha had wanted to accomplish with Naaman. Because he took food. This is the theme that recurs through Tanakh. You can't, a Navi cannot take compensation for his work as a Navi.
Directly or indirectly.
Directly or indirectly.
So then in our case, it was totally against everything that we've been taught before.
And that comes back to the question.
Yeah.
I'm debating whether to look one more story or whether to this out of all right. Let's look at one more story. This we'll have to go back to. Malachim Aleph, Perek Yudalef. I got to watch the clock. All right.
Did you say Perek Yudalef?
Malachim Aleph, Perek Yudalef. Back to Yeravam. Right, the same Yeravam who, in the first story that we looked at, the same Yeravam who the Isha Elokim, who came from Yehuda to Betel, told him that he's not allowed to eat bread or water in the city of Betel. Perek Yudalet.
Wait, can I just say something? This is anyway after the fact. In other words, what you just said.
What
now,
I'm showing you is a pattern. Correct.
Right.
It's after the story
of
Shaul. But the pattern is a pattern that reflects a certain perspective that I think permeates the whole period of time.
But did it happen before the time of Shaul?
I would assume. We'll come back to that issue. But I would assume that the perspective is the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there is a distinction to be made. That's where I wanted to go. Try to understand what that distinction is. But we're going to get there. Ba'etahi chala aviya ben Yeravam. Yeravam, remember, Yeravam ben Nevat is the one who broke away the kingdom of the north and built the idol in Beit El, in the altar, and the Navi comes to him and he says, your altar is going to be destroyed, your kingdom is going to be destroyed as a punishment. So here's where the punishment begins. Aviyah ben Yeravam got sick. Aviyah is the son, he is the heir to the throne, he's the only heir to the throne, and he took ill. Vayomer Yeravam leishto. So Yeravam turns to his wife, and he says to her, Kumina vihishtanit, velo yedu ki at eshet Yeravam. Go and disguise yourself. Disguise yourself. Shouldn't know that you are Mrs. Yeravam. Vehalacht Shilo, go to Shilo. Hinei sham Achiyah ha-Navi asher diber alai lemelech al ha'am hazeh. Go and find Achiyah Shiloni. Achiyah Shiloni is Achiyah from Shiloh, who was the Navi who had told me that I was going to have the northern kingdom as a split away kingdom from Judah. Right? That was in chapter 11. No pun intended. V'lakachta biyadech asera lechem unikudim bakbuk dvash uvatela. And take with you 10 loaves of bread and some wine. Hu yagid lach ma yeh lenar, and let him tell you what will be the fate of this child. So here, for some strange reason, he sends Mrs. Yeravam to a message to the Navi, and he sends him with bread and wine. Vatasken eshet Yeravam vatakom vatelach Shiloh vatavo bet achiyah. She comes, Mrs. Yeravam comes to the house of Shiloh, to the house of Achiyah. V'Achiyah lo yachol li'ot ki kamu enav misevo. Achiyah was an old man at this point, and he was blind. V'Hashem amar el Achiyahu, hine eshet Yeravam ba lidrosh davar me'imach el bena, ki cholehu, kazo v'chazo to dever eleh. But he knew what was going on, because God had told him that Mrs. Yeravam was going to come to you with because of a child who was sick. V'hi kivo'ah v'hi mitnakera, she arrived disguised as, right, as a regular
What did that make if he was blind?
And also, wouldn't he know anyway if it was?
All good questions. V'hi kishmo achiyah at kol raglea, as achiyah hears the voice, the sounds of her footsteps. Baba Petach v'yomer, he said, opens the door, blind, and he says, "Boy Eshet Yeravam, enter, Mrs. Yeravam."
So much for the disguise.
Lama ze at mitnakera? Why are you disguising yourself? V'anachi shaluach elayich kasha. I have harsh words for you. Lechi imri li Yeravam. Go tell Yeravam. I lifted you up amongst the people. I made you leader over the people of Israel. And I tore the kingdom away from David, and I gave it to you. But you were not like David, my servant. David walked in my path. David listened to me. You, Yeravam, Egel in Beit El, did not. You did terrible things, worse than anybody before you, which is a really strange statement to make about the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, but okay. There are no before you, because he's the first, but. Me you disposed, me you ignored, me you threw away, and you went, mean God, and you went and you made idols in Betel. Here's the punishment to house of Yeravam. I will destroy from Yeravam any male heir. It's a very graphic and a very pejorative description of male heirs. I will destroy the house of Yeravam. Hamet liyiravam ba'ir yochlu aklavim. No burial. Remember the Isha Elokim that was also punished with no burial? No burial. It's worse than death. Death. Worse the punishment than death in the world of Tanakh is to be dead, is to be killed without burial. The dogs of the field will eat the carcasses. The hamet basada yochlu of hashamayim, or the birds of the heavens will eat the carcasses. Ki Hashem dibe. That's to Yeravam. The at, Mrs. Yeravam, kumi lechil vetecha, go home. Bevo'al raglayich ha'ira umete yalet. By the time you get home, child will have died. V'safdulo ko Yisrael, Israel will mourn for him, they will eulogize him. V'kavru oto, they will bury him. Of all the children of Yeravam, this one alone will merit burial. Because he is a good kite. Because in the house of Yeravam, he was a good boy. And so he will merit to be buried. The rest of the story, I'm going to skip. Take it for granted that he, of course, does not eat of her bread and a drink of wine. So what's going on? What's going on? Why does he disguise her? And why does he give her bread and wine when he knows from the experience of the Navi in Bethel that the Navi is not going to take food? What's this? Why the constant revolving story around feeding the Navi?
I think it'll avert the decree.
Question: how feeding the Navi will avert the decree? And in the case of Shaul, he wants to feed him so he can get the decree.
They keep testing the Navi to see.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go back one step. And let's ask the question, Alan, that you asked earlier. If you never pay the Navi,
how does he support himself?
How does he support himself? So the first thing we have to understand is that in the world of Tanakh, the word Navi, Ish Elokim, and Ro'eh are not synonymous. We use them interchangeably. They don't mean the same thing. A Navi is a spokesman. For example, by Aaron and Moshe, Torah says that Aaron that would represent Moshe in speaking to Paro, Atati Aaron achicha yenvi echa yatati helo lelohim. Aaron, your brother, will be your spokesman, and you will be to him an authority. God says to Moshe. The word Navi in the context of a man of God was a position that was an official position. It was an official position in the court of the king. A Navi spoke to the king. A Navi was a position equal to the king, much equivalent to the king's advisors, except that a king's advisors were a civil appointment, whereas a Navi was a divine appointment. But the role of a Navi was to be kind of a, what's the equivalent here of a state controller? They have such a thing? They don't have such a thing in Missouri. In California.
There's a controller. Right?
Controller?
There's a controller.
Yeah.
What's
the state treasurer? But
the
no
state
controller.
Treasurer, yeah. Okay, well.
I thought there was a
controller. In Israel, they have, it's called the Mevaker HaMedina.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
There is a person, there are places where there's the person designated to be the checks and balance, the hold of the government accountable.
Yeah, in Missouri, that's state auditor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what it makes sense.
It's an official position. You appoint them. Let me ask you the question differently. Why are judges, I don't know if all judges are, all federal judges, are lifetime appointments?
State judges are not.
Why are federal judges lifetime appointments?
Elected. Corrupt. Some places
they don't have to please anybody.
Right. So they don't have to please anybody. Who pays the salary?
The government.
The government. Right? Who doesn't pay their salary?
The litigants.
Right. Why?
They can't influence them.
Because can you imagine a court system where the payment to the court, to the judge, was by user fee from the litigants?
No.
Right. The salary of the judge has to be independent of the people to whom they are helping or hindering.
Right.
On the other hand, who pays the salary of the lawyer?
The lawyer.
The client.
Why is a lawyer allowed to take money from the client but a judge not?
The judge is ruling.
Ask the lawyer here. Give us the insight here.
The lawyer is because he's advancing his client's or her client's interests.
Correct. That's the difference.
He doesn't have to worry about whether it's right or wrong.
Right. That's the difference between a Navi and a Ro'eh. A Navi works for God. A Ro'eh works for the person who comes to him.
Oh,
So there's a fascinating gra, Vilna Gaon, in Mishle. See, the Mefarshim here struggle with this question of why they offer, they think they can offer this Isha Elokim money. Why does the Na'ar or Shaul think they can offer the money to Shura, to the Isha Elokim? And so Rashi suggests, or the Radak suggests, that they're not sure. The language of Rashi, Lo hayah Shaul makir b'ma'asav shel Shmuel, he didn't really know Shmuel, he didn't know that Shmuel would refuse. Or the Radak who says, Lo hayu yodim im hayah mekabel mamon, they didn't know if he would accept money or if wouldn't accept money. So there's a Gran Mishlei, he says something very interesting. He says, when we talk about Nevi'im, we talk about Nevi'im in the court of the king. But outside of the court of the king, what did the Nevi'im do? What was their professional world? What was their activity outside of the time that they walked into the court of Yerovam ben Nevat and told him that he was going to die? What did they do for a living? What did they do in general? And says the Gra, it's a fascinating idea, that their primary tafkid of a Navi was to provide personal counsel and insight to the people. They would literally go from town to town, guiding people, helping people, providing people insight, praying for people. You'll forgive the analogy, it's almost like this image of the Hasidic Rebbe giving out brachas.
Like an advisor.
And in that capacity, it was not only perfectly acceptable to pay them, but that's how they made a living.
Mm. So they had two roles.
They had two roles. And the dual nature of the role could is reflected in that pasuk, in the inserted into the middle of the story. That Lifanim be Yisrael, where are we? Perek, back to Perek Tet. Lifanim be Yisrael, ko hamar ha'ish belachtoli drosho lakim, lechu v'nelcha ad haro'eh, ki lenavi hayom yikare lifanim haro'eh. In the middle of the story about the Rebbe Shekel Kesef, we have this interjected parenthetical statement. What we call a Navi, in those days they're called a Ro'eh. Right? And what we call a Navi in those days are called a Ro'eh, meaning they didn't go to him because he was the Navi. They went to him because he was a Ro'eh, because he was an Isha Lakim, because he had divine insight, because he could give them a bracha, because he could help them find their donkey. It was a personal request. On a personal request, it was not only acceptable to provide financial support, that's how they made a living. The moment they arrived, however, they encountered not the Ro'eh, but the Navi.
So it's interchangeable, their tafkid was
interchangeable. And that may be the clue to understanding the story of Yeravam ben Nevat, who sends Mrs. Yeravam in a disguise. Why? Because this child, who is sick, has two identities. He is the child of his mother, and he is the heir to the throne. And so what Yeravam says to his wife is, go and disguise yourself so that you do not arrive on the Navi's doorpost as the wife of the king and as the mother of the prince of the heir to the throne. You go to him disguised as a civilian because you go to him to ask mercy from a mother for his son.
Oh, wow.
And the moment she opens the door, he says to her, as a Navi, boy, Eshet Yeravam.
Yeah, I know you can't.
Your identity here is Yeravam's wife. So here's two messages. Message number one for Yeravam. Message for Yeravam, his kingdom is over and his heirs will be destroyed and it will be horrible and whatever else comes with it. Message number two was to you, Mrs. Yeravam, mother of your child. And the mother of your child is that he will be buried and he will have a hesped and he will have the eulogy and he will have the covered. That message was for you, not for Yeravam. And he says so. To you, for you, the message is for your child. To Yeravam, it's a different message. But the distinction in her disguise was specifically because there was an attempt to divide not only the message but also the role of the Navi. And that's why she brought
payment.
But did they not understand that the role of the Navi was twofold, in other words?
They were that was what they were trying to distinguish. They were trying to separate them and say, I'll bring you money, and I'll disguise myself as a civilian, so I can ask you the question as the mother of a child and ask for a bracha. as a mother of a child, disguised from thy position as the wife of your Avam, and therefore bring you money. That's exactly, the food was part of the disguise. The food there was part of the disguise. They understood exactly the distinction. Unofficial business, says the Navi. That's why when Yeravam offered the Navi, the Isha Elokim from Beit El, when Yeravam offered him food, what he was trying to do was derail the official message to a personal one. And he refused to eat. I can't eat. I'm an official business. This message comes from God. This is the Navi to the king. In part two of the story, disguised her as a civilian, and part of that disguise is to bring bread and wine. And that's the dynamic. That's, I think, why in the story you have this inserted comment about the distinction between the Ro'eh and the Navi. And the,
right.
So in modern Hebrew, there's an idiomatic expression that's called Halach Limtzo Atonot Umatza Melucha. Went to find donkeys and found kingship instead. Right? It's a modern idiom for something to that effect. I don't know exactly the expression, but I think that's how it goes. The basic meaning being is that you go to look for one thing and you find something else far more significant. Right? You go looking for pebbles and you find the jewel. Okay. In this case, the message being they went to him as a ro'eh, but what they found was the Navi and Malkus. To be continued.
I heard it's